The sun is setting slightly later, just slightly, a little bit every day, and it's what we all need this week. Hope in the shape of light. I've been watching the birds in my garden and in my parents' garden, and they're becoming slightly livelier as some are making preparations for nesting season. You can see it all over their faces. Location, location, location. Snowdrops are rearing their heads, as are the cup-like yellow aconites, and I couldn't be happier. I'm starting to think about the garden. That's as far as it has gone for me. I'm a bit of a fair weather gardener, but I am fully aware that preparations are needed before the season changes. So don't worry, dear gardeners, I'll be donning my wellies, digging for victory with my cuppa in hand as soon as these daily downpours stop and the temperature rises ever so slightly. I try to learn a little more every year, plant something new, expand my herb garden, prune roses and sow wildflower seeds where space allows. That's how I approach most things. What one thing can I add to the progress I've already made? Slow and steady, my friends. So it's quite amusing listening back to yourself on a podcast. Kind of painful. As I try, as I might, not to over-edit or change the flow of the original conversation. But today you might find yourself correcting me as you listen. I certainly did when I listened back. Or you may hear me tell similar stories to last week or bring up familiar analogies. And that's because not only did I interview Lauren and today's guest in the week I was hot off a trip to London and excited about my gallery viewings, but today my conversation is with another bold and brilliant artist, come homeschool mama, Betsy Jenkins.
So full of energy and life and joy and fun. And you know what? I think Charlotte Mason works so well with him because what it does is while we're out in nature, we're actually taking the time to say, oh, did you see this? And I'm drawing his attention down towards detail, down towards his surroundings. You know, I'm asking him questions that cause him to think more deeply about his surroundings, about poetry, about art. And so it's completely doable with these kids because it's not a situation where we're opening up their head and pouring in the knowledge. It's where we are actively whetting their appetite.
Betsy, of course, was not aware of my conversational insecurities and faux pas as we dug into homeschooling all boys, the Charlotte Mason philosophy for children with special educational needs, their life on a lake, her hilarious Instagram account, Homeschooling with the Classics, and she gives some fabulous tips on studying art and art movements alongside history. And that's amongst so much else in our conversation. I know I always say this, but you're going to love it. Friends, don't forget to pop over to YouTube and check out this week's chapel session. And did you see my social media post marking my completion of Wendell Berry's Hannah Coulter? Wow, you guys loved that book as much as I did. You should go and check out the comment thread. If you ever needed a recommendation for that book or a review, there's certainly one there. Okay, it's time. Let's listen in to my conversation with the fabulous Betsy Jenkins. My name is Leah Bowden, and this is the Modern Miss Mason podcast.
I am married and have five sons, and they are ages 6, 10, 15, 18, and 20. So I've got all the experiences all at once with raising kids. And we live in a log cabin on a private lake in North Carolina, which is just a wonderful place to raise kids because there's so much for them to do outdoors. We have woods around us and the lake, but we're also kind of in this really cool little pocket where we're central within our city, but we're kind of hidden away. And so kind of the best of both worlds.
When you say private, can I ask you, when you say private lake, do you mean
Yes.
it's just yours, or do you share that with a neighbor, or can people, is it, does it mean that it's not, it doesn't belong to the general public, so it's not like it doesn't belong to the state or anything?
That's right. So it belongs to ourselves and three neighbors. So
Oh,
we
that's
have
so cool.
private right of access to the lake.
Wow. Okay, I
Yeah.
interrupted you. Continue.
No, that's all right. So, we've been homeschooling for, gosh, I think about 10 years now, on and off. We have taken little breaks here and there for the kids to attend charter school just as seasons required it, or, because the child wanted to try it out, which we kind of hold homeschooling loosely as, just something that if it works well for this child, then let's do it. If we need a season off for our kids, then we'll do it that way. In fact, my oldest son was only homeschooled for 1 year, and then we discovered we had creative differences.
I like that. Well
Yeah.
played.
Yes. So he graduated from a STEM charter school, valedictorian. And so that was just the perfect thing for him. And then my other boys are all currently homeschooled. And we also homeschool using the methods of Charlotte Mason. And with, some adaptations here and there, we have some special learners. So we've had to adapt some things. But honestly, Charlotte Mason's methods work so well for children with special needs just because they are so focused on how the individual child grows and learns.
That's so helpful. I'm sure lots of people just kind of sat up in their chair, or I don't know, paused on their treadmill whilst listening to that. I do get a lot of questions, and I think people often, depending on how you view the Charlotte Mason philosophy, or who you're listening to, or how you're interpreting it, will really then kind of adjust the way you see it for your children. And I think I do get questions about children with special educational needs. And my general understanding and experience is that it, like you've just said, it is actually fantastic. But I think we can probably overthink it or overcomplicate it. Now, obviously, you are on the Modern Miss Mason podcast, so when you say, you use her methods but tweak them up a little bit, we're all about that over here. But can you give us maybe one example with children with special educational needs of how, one of her methods or part of the philosophy that you like, this has worked brilliantly with a child who sees the world differently?
So, for us, a lot of the reading good, beautiful literature together has been so foundational for our boys and for their learning experience. I have two children with dysgraphia and dyslexia. So having read aloud time and then having a chance to let them narrate back to me and kind of immerse themselves into the story too in that verbal way has been really helpful for us.
Right.
And because a lot of other methods of education, we immediately start children on writing out their thoughts.
Yeah.
And with the gentle transition into that with Charlotte Mason's methods, it means that my children who have difficulties with writing and reading are able to move into it more gently. And that's been very helpful for us.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. I think that's definitely some of what I've heard, and really what I've known with my family is that all the children have developed at their own stage and at different times. They've all learned to read at different times, some taking much longer than others. But I think the first principle is children are born persons. So I think
Yes.
believing in the child and then believing in the power of the science of relations means that any family and any child can approach the philosophy and uniquely work it out for them. And I think that's definitely what we celebrate and talk about over here. And it seems like you do too. I think one of the other things that I hear occasionally, Betsy, and you are a mother of five boys, I sometimes get asked the question, how does Charlotte Mason work for boys? Which I'm like, what do you mean? I and I think because there's this kind of emphasis, I don't know if that's the right word, but maybe like art and being outside and, you know, looking at trees and beauty and poetry and music. Some families, and this hasn't happened for a few years when we ask this question, have often struggled with how do I do that with a load of rambunctious boys who don't want to hear poetry. Now, you are a prime example of seeing the possibilities and living this out. How would you respond to someone asking you something like that?
So I have a six-year-old who is your typical rough and tumble, you know, jump before you think type of kid. I mean, this child just embodies impulse control issues. So, because he is just so full of energy and life and joy and fun. And you know what? I think Charlotte Mason works so well with him, because what it does is, while we're out in nature, we're actually taking the time to say, oh, did you see this? And I'm drawing his attention down towards detail, down towards his surroundings. You know, I'm asking him questions that cause him to think more deeply about his surroundings, about poetry, about art. And so it's completely doable with these kids, because it's not a situation where we're opening up their head and pouring in the knowledge. It's where we are actively whetting their appetite for more beautiful, deep and rich things to look on, to think on, to see. One of my six-year-old's favorite things is nature treasure hunt, was what we call it. And he and I go out on our property on nature treasure hunts pretty much every day, even in weather. And we will go out and look for nature treasure. So, oh, here's a new mushroom. Let's look at that. How exciting. You know, did you see this feather? Look at how the tree has changed colors since last week. So these are things that he enjoys so much, because they involve, you know, almost a hide and seek game of looking for this treasure. And it's just very easy to adapt all of Charlotte Mason's methods towards these more energetic children.
I think we often interpret movement and, you know, children who can't sit still as lack of attention. But, you know, I've got a couple of those in my family, and I can tell you they often will bring the best narrations after they've been hanging upside down from a chair, or, well, this is, my kids are a bit older now, this did used to happen. And because they are actually that kinesthetic needing to move or touch something or hold something is what's enabling them to listen and to key in. And I think we have to be more conscious of that, don't we, Betsy?
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. I had one boy that when he was narrating, he had to bounce up and down on the exercise ball, because otherwise he would actually lose the rhythm of his thoughts and his, you know, vocalization of those thoughts. But the rhythm of bouncing kept his attentions focused. And then I had another son who had to hold these little squishy animals, these little rubber animals, and he would squeeze them and rub them in his fingers, and that would help create that atmosphere of attention for him. And so, yeah, it's just all about figuring out the way your child learns and then adjusting the learning towards that. Because like you said, born person, there's nothing wrong with the way they're learning. That's the way they were created to learn. So it's our job as their educator to adjust that to their learning style.
Yeah. And I, Karen Glass, in her book, In Vital Harmony, she talks about the two foundational principles being, you know, children are born persons and education is the science of relations. And our approach to our children, what we believe of them and what they believe of themselves, and our belief in truly what education is, if those two things are the cornerstones, if they're foundational, I'm mixing up all my metaphors, but if they are key to our approach to home educating, then whatever the child, whatever is going on for that child, really, it's about us, isn't it? It's about our attitude, our perspective, and how we are willing to move and learn about them, learn about educational theory and go for it. And Yeah, I think this is it, that's so helpful hearing you share some of those stories. I want to quickly just kind of swoop into homeschooling with the classics, because I can't we can't move on really without saying, you know, bravo for your Instagram account, which was once kind of stolen and then rebuilt, right? What happened there?
Yes, very true. I learned a hard lesson. So what happened was I had about 32,000 followers at that point. And in the middle of the night, hackers got into my account, stole it, held it for ransom. And then I would not pay $500 to have it restored. So it was permanently deleted. And I had to start over again from scratch. And while that was hard, there was also blessings involved in it. For one, once you've lost everything, you're no longer so attached.
Right.
You're willing to take risks, to be authentic, to say, you know what? I don't need to pander to everyone. Mm-hmm. I can kind of decide what my community here looks like. And also to hold it with loose hands, to be like, you know what? If this, as long as this is bringing joy in life, great. But once it becomes a burden, it's okay to lay it down, or even lay it down for a season. I'm totally open to that more now than I was before, just because I know that losing it wasn't the end of the world, you know?
Great. Good perspective. I know I've been saying a lot recently to a few friends who are, you know, kind of have their, some of their work on social media platforms, that it is a borrowed platform. It's not our home. We don't own it.
Yes.
It could just go overnight. And that's a great perspective. Can you tell us a little bit though about the background? I do remember Greta, our mutual friend, who you've known a long time since college, right? Greta Eskridge.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll know her. She was on season one, I think, of the podcast. But I remember her saying, hey, Leah, my friend is starting this really funny meme account for homeschoolers. You've got to go follow her. And that's before I met you. But yeah, it must have been. So where did the idea come from, and why classic art?
Well, the idea actually came out of a painful and difficult situation. One of my sons has an autoimmune disorder that causes chronic pain. And thankfully, currently he is in remission. He is not experiencing a lot of pain days, and we're doing really well. But at the time when this was born, he was having pretty much every day was lost pain for him. And it was a very difficult season for him and for all of us, just spent managing his pain and trying to find answers. And I started making these funny homeschool memes just for him, like poking fun at the homeschool community and our quirks and our eccentricities. And he thought they were funny. And I just decided, you know what? I'll just make an account, throw them up. Maybe somebody will find them funny. And then sweet Greta and Jen Naraki went and looked at them, and they sprinkled their magic wands. And all of a sudden I woke up with, you know, 10,000 followers one morning.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's happens. That's amazing. So how do you choose the art? I guess that's my question.
Well, I actually went to college for fine arts and art history, but did not get my degree. Instead, I got my MRS and became a mama. So
what's MRS? What does that mean?
My missus.
Oh, sorry.
Got married.
Totally missed that one. I thought
no, it's all right.
American diploma that I don't understand. So yes, good for you. That is a good qualification.
So I've always been passionate about art history, studying art and sharing it with others. And I just loved the format of making memes out of art. And it's an interesting medium actually to share art with people, because it kind of disarms you and it makes you look at it differently. It feels more personal. It feels more relevant if it's a joke that relates to your life. And so it can kind of introduce people to art through a different way. And then I always list the artist and the name of the work because I want people to go and research them. I want them to learn about them because I find these artists so inspiring and just love, especially I have a big passion for sharing artwork by people of color and representing people of color, because especially in the classical art world, there is just not much available. So it's been a passion of mine to just seek it out and to seek out representations of people with different ethnicities that are beautiful and respectful and, you know, really show quality in the execution of the work.
Yeah. And you do that so well. I definitely have found myself research. I mean, I'm hugely passionate about this, about art and about introducing not only our children, but that, you know, as parents, we are understanding and exposing ourselves to more than ever before, you know, the artists that have been and are still designing today and painting today. And I definitely found myself researching some of the artists that you have profiled. But also the other thing that your account does to us all, and definitely just to me, is that I find myself in a gallery. Now, I know ours have kind of just started to open back again after COVID, but I'll find myself in a gallery with my children and I'll be looking at some beautiful piece of art and all I can see is a meme.
Yes.
Like, oh, this is in my head. I'm like, Betsy needs to see this one. I think quite a few years ago when you first started it, I think I remember sending you a picture. I'm like, look at this one.
Yes, you did. Yes.
It's just one of those things. You kind of begin to see the humanity in the people, don't you? And I love that. It's great. I bet you never imagined what would come out of that. I guess the positive and the negative, because I know you get some backlash as well. but it kind of attracts all sorts, doesn't it? How do you cope with negative comments? We don't have to go too far down that path, but how do you deal with that?
Well, one of the biggest things I do is that I hold them all in perspective.
Okay.
So first of all, this is the internet. That means that people don't necessarily see me as another person on the other side of their screen. Sure. They believe it's a public forum in which they can make any comment they like, and there's no repercussions. So within that, I've realized I don't have to argue with people. I don't have to explain myself, unless sometimes I will, but that's usually just because I feel like someone has gotten the wrong side of the stick and I want to give them the chance to hear my perspective. Yeah. Otherwise, I do a lot of block and bless. You know, block them, bless them, and then we're done, you know. But also, you have to realize that with the amount of followers that I have, the negative may seem like, oh my goodness, you know, you're getting 10 negative DMs in one day. But really, that's going to be like 3% of the messages I get. So I can't hold them in greater esteem than I do the other 97%, you know?
Yeah, that's so perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just goes back to that Rudyard Kipling line from the poem, if you can see both praise and you know, the corrective words and see both those imposters as the same.
Absolutely. It's so great. Yeah, really. I love that poem. And again, it comes down to perspective. I saw something the other day, I don't know if it was a video reel or a post, but again, there was this real sense of people just forgetting there's a person behind here, and there was lots of negativity going on, and the lady who had written the post kept appearing in the comments saying, hello, I'm here, I'm a person, I can see this, I'm reading it.
Yes,
it's amazing how we forget so quickly that this is a person with feelings. But yes, we won't go too far down that one. But well, we love homeschooling with the classics. We're so glad that you that you do that, and it brings so much joy, but also really does get people thinking and also helps us to discover new artists. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell us a little bit? I'd love to hear a bit more about So you started, or you were going to go to college, or you started college for fine art and did you say art history? Is that what you said?
That's correct. A dual major. Yes.
Yeah. So have you ever been able to go back to that? Has your kind of passion for that continued? And I do know that you have a design business. We'd love to know more about that.
Well, thank you. Yes. So I have, over the years, done a lot of commission work. I've been a freelance artist. I've done, you know, artwork for magazine covers. I did artwork for a tableware company for a while, where I was designing the patterns that went on to, you know, the dishes and onto the tablecloths and things like that. And I really loved that job. That was so fun. And then it kind of led me into this area where I am, where my business partner and I, she is an interior designer and I'm an artist. And together we've created this business where we create patterns and original artwork. So I will create original artwork on canvas and then take that digitally and turn it into a repeating pattern that we then put on fabric. Most of our work is that we license our patterns with fabric companies.
Okay.
So they print our patterns and we receive royalties is how that works.
So what, have you seen what they've used them for? Have you seen some of the material or the fabric that these have been printed on?
Oh yes. Yeah. It's really fun because what we're doing is we're actually marketing to the direct to design business. So what that means is rather than my fabric showing up at your local craft store, it's going to be instead in the high-end furniture and textile design market. So this is going to be like your high-end furniture is going to use our fabric on their upholstery, or they're going to be using it for drapes, things like that.
Oh, that's amazing. So where do you fit all this in, Betsy? All these boys, a lake to look after. How do you fit in this work, this creative work, which I do believe is really important, isn't it?
I think the big part of it is that I have older kids now.
Yes.
When I had all little boys, there wasn't a lot of time for creative work. You know, I might catch an evening here or there where I would paint, but a lot of the time I was so tired that I didn't do a lot of painting in that season. And I think it's just important to recognize when you have smaller kids that it's a season and that eventually you will have time again for these pursuits. And so now that I have older kids, you know, I can actually pay my older sons to babysit the younger ones while I do work. In fact, this weekend, that we're having the International Furniture Market, which is the largest furniture showcase market in the world, is happening in a town right near ours. And I'll be going there for the weekend to be doing meetings and seeing our fabric on upholstery and things at the showcases. And so my son will be babysitting his brothers.
Love it. That's amazing. I hope that's hope that goes really well. So how have you found as a mother, as a home educating mother, how have you integrated this into family life? I know that I remember the first time I spoke at a Wild and Free conference, I remember one of the things that I said to all these women in this room was kind of, what do you have in your hands? A bit like when God said to Moses with his staff, you know, what do you have in your hand? Use it. And I remember this idea of saying to these moms, what are you already good at? What are you passionate about? What do you do well? Use that. You know, and we often hide those things away or push. And yes, like you've just said, when we've got young children, we don't often have the energy and time to pursue that so much as we do when they're older. But actually using those passions, using those gifts, using those ideas with woven into our homeschooling rhythm, I think is so important. How has that looked for you guys with your boys?
Well, I, you know, have definitely encouraged the arts in our homeschool, much to the detriment of the sciences, but yes, if you've seen my memes that I did on the Enneagram. I'm an Enneagram 4, and that one is me. So basically, my children are well versed in emotional health and yes. in the arts, but sadly can't do math. So
oh well.
Yeah. So with my creativity, when my kids were younger and today in our homeschool, a lot of it has come out in teaching them how to paint, in teaching them about different artists and art movements, in teaching them how to listen to music and poetry and hear the rhythm and the cadence in it, in teaching them how to be emotionally responsible and healthy. And a big one is actually teaching them how to be fun and spontaneous and imaginative and just to see the world with glittering eyes and look for the magic in the everyday.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so inspiring. I love that. And you know what? There are plenty of people who can do maths in the world. I love being around the artists. They're my favorite kind of people. But I'm glad there are accountants out there. That's very helpful too.
Oh, absolutely. We need them to teach our children math.
Yes. We need to count up our money. So how now, Charlotte Mason had a, she kind of used the, paints the picture of art study, picture study, of she had this desire for children to engage with the masters, she called it. So these kind of art that speaks of history and even kind of theology and just reflective of thinkers and creators from past times. And this was really important. And she would have this as part of the rhythm and the programs in her schools and in the PNEU of looking at pictures and purely talking about them, narrating from them. What do you think of that approach? And have you done that with your boys? Or how have you tweaked that and done that slightly different?
So what we do is we often put it in conjunction with history. So whatever time period in history we're studying, we're going to look at the art movement of that time, because art always imitates life. And so we can see, okay, this is why this was such a big characteristic of, you know, the Northern Renaissance art movement during this period in time. This is why they made this character look like this famous historical person, because they were drawing parallels, things like that. And so we look at it that way, but then we also bring it down to a human level too, where we're like, okay, you know, What do you think this person is feeling in this picture? What do you see that gives us a context clue in the picture? How do you think they, you know, why do you think that they set this biblical story in for them what would have been modern day Italy? What do you think the point of that was? So a lot of conversation. And then after we do conversation, then we'll move into a narration, just because I think it gives kids a little better idea of going deeper and then being able to pull from that what they want to express about the picture.
I love that. And how, I mean, with five children, you must have heard so many different expressions. And then with my kids, I do. I'm amazed at how often it's the younger ones that will see the detail that nobody else sees. In fact, just today, my youngest is 10, so they're all getting a bit older now, but we were looking at a Walter Langley picture, who is actually an artist from a city near where we live, but had painted this whole collection of pictures from a fishing village in Cornwall. And we were looking at this picture. There's a lady carrying a basket, and I didn't even think of looking in the basket, but straight away my 10-year-old looks at the details. She wants to know what's in it, and she sees fish in there, and I'm having to look really close to see this. And she just brought out things that I just did not see, and even my older son, who was looking at it with us, that we just hadn't noticed that. And that's what's so wonderful about getting younger eyes looking at that, but also doing it corporately with a group of kids is so fun, because they all bring out different things, don't they?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I love the different perspectives that each of them bring to it. And it is interesting because, you know, having so many children, having mine so spread apart in age, we have a lot of repetition of things. Yeah, yeah, and sometimes I'll come at it with a boring old, we've done this already. But then my younger sons always bring this new vivacious, you know, energy to it and this new perspective that makes it come alive all over again, I find.
Yeah, I love that. We often, when I'm kind of, we've got four children, so two and two, and we call them the new batch, the old batch and the new batch.
Yes.
So there's like a little gap in between, and I am like repeating things, although I do shake it up a little bit and kind of put things, new things in the mix. But it is interesting hearing the perspectives of my younger children, and even for me coming at it again, like seeing, looking deeper and lingering on things and just enjoying it in a different season is amazing. So mm-hmm. how modern do you go with the art that you show your kids and talk to them about?
Well, along with doing art study, along with history, we do also do art study along with like certain months here in the United States. We have as like Asian and Pacific Islander month, and then Hispanic Heritage Month, and Black American History Month. And so with those specialty months, then we will also bring out works by these different people. And with the different people groups, a lot of the artwork we're going to find from them is going to be more modern, because a lot of these groups did not have the access to creating art on a regular basis. I mean, like if you go back and look at African American art, obviously you're going to find it all the way back to the first African enslaved person arriving in America. They brought with them art, but they didn't have the ability or the materials to do the output that they can nowadays. And so I like to bring in the whole array of artwork from these different people groups, you know, going from way back when all the way to modern, just because I want them to see just the kaleidoscope of experience. Absolutely. That this people group has had.
So good. And like you said, art imitates life. So we learn so much, don't we, from that, the reflections of the artists and the poets and the creators of those times. I remember showing my older children some Banksy prints, which is, you know, really, really modern, darling. Where is what Charlotte would say. But I wanted them to see, like, this is somebody who keeps himself hidden, but just, you know, inverted commas, graffitis, but he puts art on in public places. And I think we actually saw one of his pieces in Liverpool. And it was so interesting. And what do you think, kids? You know, what do you think of what he's doing? But that whole imitating popular culture and showing us what's going on. And it was interesting for a moment, and it was reflective of something and that was going on in the art movement. But from a kind of deeply looking at a picture to find a story and to see history and to feel the emotion of the artist, it is really not the same, is it?
No, and part of that is because art like Banksy's is actually, it's fast art. Yes. So what that means is it's meant to be done quickly, and it's meant to impact you with a punch. It's right. Not meant to be looked at deeply and really absorbed. It's supposed to hit you in the face with its message quickly and squarely. So, you know, obviously it serves a great purpose in the messages that Banksy has wanted to share out in the community. And he also believes that art should be available to all people, which I definitely agree with. Yes. And so I appreciate his artwork on that level, but it's a different quality. It's a different style than if you're going to go back and look at a Renaissance painting and look at the depth there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were in London over the summer, and we were looking at an exhibition with a Rothko exhibition next to a Turner exhibition, and my husband mm-hmm. Did an art degree, and he loves Rothko. So he was kind of sat, and we could see there were people sat on benches staring for ages at this seemingly big, huge, rectangular, purple thing.
Yes. But yeah,
the people were just watching and looking and looking and looking. Now you look at something like that, and I think I heard, you can hear people walking past like, oh, looks like a three-year-old, doesn't it? And you hear things like that, don't you? But actually, when you read alongside the art, you read about the artist, you read the story behind it, you read, and Rothko wanted, I may have mentioned this on the podcast already, but Rothko wanted, before he died, he donated the pieces, this whole collection, and said, I want them exhibited near Turner. I want them to be, because I was inspired by Turner. But if you were to, you put, see them together, nothing like it. But the story behind it, and that's not quick art, is it? Rothko's not quick art, but yet.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But yet it's simple but profound. And I actually loved that my kids got to see this, just were exposed to this array of ages and stories and expression hanging on the walls of the Tate Britain. It was fantastic.
Yes, that's really special.
Yeah, it was. And I'm just looking now, I always buy the postcards from the galleries so I can put things up on the wall at home. Just as little, memories of remember when we saw that and sat and looked at that. So if there are people listening, Betsy, and they've never... Maybe they are sat there, and maybe they are good at maths and science, and this is what they do with their kids, and they're thinking, I just don't know where to start. I never had this in my childhood. This is not part of kind of my natural way of doing things, or I just, it's not second nature to me. How would they start? They want to start. They've got a desire to show their children some art. How would you get them going?
So first of all, I would say to not approach art as an elitist subject, that you should have a degree, that you have to know about it, that you have to know, even though I just said we love to study the history behind it, you don't actually have to know that.
Yeah.
You can approach art purely for the way it affects you. It makes you feel what you see in it. And then hopefully, if you find a personal attachment to that, then you will have the desire to go deeper, to study deeper. There's wonderful books out there about teaching children how to look at art. And I think those are great places for adults who don't really know how to look at art to start too, just because they can be really great tools in learning how to look at art, what you're looking at. But ultimately, the artist wants you to have a personal connection with the work and to feel something when you look at it. So really pay attention to how it affects you.
So you're saying to pay attention to how you feel when you look at it?
Yes, pay attention to how you feel, the mood that you pick up in the art. Do you like this piece? Why do you like it? Why don't you like it? Does this piece make you uncomfortable? Do you think that was the artist's intention? Things like that, beside looking at, I see a dog, I see fish in the basket, it's really neat to look at all the details too. But I always tell my kids, first and foremost, let's pick up the tone. Yeah. What is the general feel here? Because that's a good foundation to build up on when we look at art.
Yeah, I love that. I do the same. I'll ask questions like, how do you think the artist was feeling on that day? Even kind of going beyond the picture, what's behind that wall? Where does that road lead? And just how does the color of the sky make you feel? And I think, but beginning by just looking, isn't it? It's just opening up an art book, buying a cheap art calendar, having a postcard from a gallery, and just beginning to look. I think for those of us who have always known this, I grew up in a family where there was art in the house. I mean, not real art, prints. I didn't grow up in a castle or anything like that, in case you're wondering. That would be amazing. But just some people are more familiar with it being around them and seeing it. Some people haven't walked into a gallery for years, have they? And I think just starting to look, Are there a couple of artists that you would say, hey, why don't you start with this one? Why don't you try that? Who would you pick for a newbie?
Well, I would actually pick, I think, Van Gogh, Van Gogh,
Van Gogh.
however it's said in your country.
Yes.
In America, if I say Van Gogh, they say bless you. But he is extremely accessible just because the colors are so vivid. His portraitures are so moving. There's so much to see with the brush strokes and the layering and the vibrancy that it's an instantly emotive piece. And that's why he is so popular. It's because his work draws something out of you instantly. And so I'd say starting with Van Gogh is a wonderful place to begin. From there, I would go Claude Monet, just because it is just miraculous to see a Claude Monet painting and then to get up close and see what's going on down at the very basic level, and to then stand back and see how he has created a world out of smudges, And Seurat, Georges Seurat, after that, pointillism, just once again, you see this big broad picture and then you go and you see the detail. And I just think some of those ones, some of those artists just really bring in the idea of how creative the art world can be and the different ways that it expresses itself. And so just try different themes, different styles, different media, and you're going to find one that speaks to you and you're going to fall in love. And once you fall in love with art, then there's no going back. You'll be hooked.
That's brilliant. And so what's some great suggestions there? My kids and I were interested in we have been last term we're studying Raphael, and we were looking at various pieces of his work, but one of them was the kind of cherub angels that are, I mean, they're just a little piece from the Sistine Chapel, but this piece has been used so commercially. I mean, you go into a card shop or a gift shop and it's on everything. You can buy t-shirts with it on and mugs with it on. So one of my questions to them as we were looking at it, so why can we buy this on a mug? Why, what is it about it? And you're right, I think some of the, even with Monet, you can buy you I can think of a couple of, if people are listening from the UK, you walk into the Works, which is this kind of budget shop with stationery and books and things like that, and everything's got Monet or Van Gogh all over it, couple of pound. But yeah, I in a way it's brilliant because people are familiar with seeing these works of art, but I wonder how many people actually know the name of the person who painted it. But Betsy, that's some brilliant suggestions, some great tips there, and I hope that that has inspired somebody who has kind of been teetering on the edge of maybe starting some composer study or even to start looking into art. And like you said, a really great way of doing that alongside what you're studying in history. Just look for an artist or some pieces of work alongside that. Absolutely brilliant. Betsy, how can people find you, reach out to you, get in touch with you on the internet?
Well, I have a couple accounts on Instagram. My memes, classical art memes, are at homeschooling underscore with the classics. And then I have my personal account where you can see more about our family life and our life here in North Carolina. And that's at Tall Timbers underscore Willow Lake. And then my business account is at JBBJ Studio.
Perfect. I will have all the links in the podcast notes so people can just go over and click and find you and come and make you their friend, as many people have. Thank you so much for this conversation. It has been really enlightening, really fun, and I'm so glad you said yes to coming on the Modern Miss Mason podcast.